Well, hello. Once again, welcome to the Creative Writing Life podcast. No theme song. I really don't know if I'm ever going to get around to doing it, so you just have to deal with my voice for the time being. Very happy today to be talking to my guest. She is an attorney turned award-winning author, and she is also the founder and CEO of Tadpole Press, tadpolepress.com. Her book, Sophie and Spot, won the gold medal for best first book in chapter books from the Moonbeam Children's Book Awards. That was in 2019. We're going to ask her about that. And also, she's the author of the short story, The Magic Door, which I believe is available on PDF, maybe in book form, but she'll have all the answers. Amber Byers, welcome to the Creative Writing Life podcast.
Thank you so much. It's so good to be here.
Oh, lovely to have you here. And there's a lot of stuff we're going to be talking about, not just about you and your material, but also what you want to talk about, which is about inspiring writers to reawaken the creativity and incorporate that euphoric feeling into their day-to-day life. But before we get to all that, yes. As regular listeners and viewers of the show might be familiar, we like to talk about anything we may have read or watched over the past couple of days, anything that struck a chord, you liked it, you hated it. I will go first to give Amber a little bit of time to gather her thoughts. So I've just been really watching a lot of TV, is the best way to put it. As we are recording this, the final episode of Shogun was on Hulu. That just aired, and I watched it, and I loved it. I think they did a fantastic job. Just every episode was just a work of art, and all the acting and the characters and the storylines just blew me away. I just loved it. And I cannot wait to see how this does when the Emmys come out. I also caught the next second and third episodes of Fallout, which is on Amazon Prime. I know nothing about the game, so all of this is new material to me. I think they're doing a great job with that. I think they're having a lot of fun with it. And it's taken me a long time to finally finish this, that I started it probably in August, and it's just been watching it in small chunks and pieces, that I finally got to wrap up watching Adventure Time, the cartoon, which right now is still on Max. And I think especially the last two seasons did a great job with all of the stories and the characters. And the finale, I just think, was probably one of the best wrap-ups for a cartoon series I've ever seen, that there's so many storylines that were tied up, and it was very mature and serious, especially for a cartoon. I just think Pendleton Ward, the creator, well, I actually don't think he was involved with it as much, but all the creators behind it, and the writers and the animators and all the voice talent, just amazing stuff. I'm really glad. I mean, when I started, it was 10 seasons long. How am I ever going to get through this?
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just a slow, steady progression through it. And really glad I did it. It's an amazing piece of work. And if you have the time and the inclination to watch 10 seasons worth of animation, can't go wrong with Adventure Time. So Amber, what about you? Thank you.
That's fun.
What about you? What's been on the TV or the screen or the books?
Yeah, well, first of all, I have to say I love cartoons too. And I wonder, because you're primarily a screenwriter, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And so it just occurred to me as you were talking, you watching TV or movies is sort of like me as a writer reading books, because you might have more of the behind the scenes info going on in your head when you're watching it. Whereas, you know, it's just, I was like, oh, this is really interesting. I had that aha moment, but yeah, I'm reading all the time, and I just finished. So I guess it's funny because I say I'm reading, but a lot of that is actually listening, because once audiobooks came out, I just put the book in my ear and listen while I clean the kitchen or while I make lunch or whatever. And so just earlier this afternoon, I finished reading Isabel Allende's book, The Wind Knows My Name, which I don't know if you've heard of it.
I have not.
Have you heard of Isabel Allende?
The name sounds very familiar.
Yeah, she's super, super famous author. She's been writing for decades. She was actually one of the authors who inspired me decades ago to become an author.
Wow.
And yeah, her and Barbara Kingsolver, and then I would also say Mary Doria Russell's book, The Sparrow, were kind of huge inspirational authors at the time. And I was working at a restaurant in college once and telling one of my colleagues that I just am so inspired by these writers, and this is what I want to do. And he's like, what, you just want to be Isabel Allende? And I was like, yes, that's what I'm going to do, except my own version. And so
sure.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned, because When I do this presentation about screenwriting to people who are just starting out, I say it's easy to watch a movie and just kind of get caught up in the story and the characters and the whole process and the whole presentation. But it's really a challenge to watch a movie or a TV show as a writer.
Yeah.
That you, because you can, you're paying more attention to, okay, here's all the things they're setting up in the first act, and here's a character traits, and here's a story detail. It might not seem important now, but it might have some kind of payoff later. Okay, that's definitely the first act or the end of the first act. Oh my gosh, here's the midpoint. There, you know, the main character has no point, I'm blanking on words, has no choice but to like to make the harder choice and go forward and try and achieve their goal. And it's interesting to see writers when you tell them that, to like watch something as a writer, because you can already see the wheels turning in their heads, like, okay, how can I do that? So you were saying, like, you as an author, you read a lot of books. So as an author, when you read somebody else's material, maybe some a writer you're not familiar with, do you see all of the, you know, behind the curtain, so to speak, all of the gears and moving parts in operation?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is just being inspired by it. And I think it's so, Liz Gilbert is one of my ultimate all-time favorite writers. And she talked about how when she was a kid, she would just read in her room. And she analogized that to some of the deepest learning she was doing, because you are gaining that experience of understanding syntax and how to put sentences together and how to craft a story. And it was kind of the first time I was like, oh, I thought I was just like entertaining myself, but I was actually like really absorbing all of this insight into how to piece literature together. And it is super entertaining, but it's also just really inspiring to see when a writer gets something really, really well done, you're like, oh my God. Like Jeff Zentner just wrote a book in the Wild Light. And it blew my mind, because the way he described smells or scents, in particular, how they moved in the book, because you can say, you know, there's advice as a writer, it's good to incorporate all five senses because it just brings the reader in a more vivid, visceral way. And so then the question is, if you're bringing in the sense of smell, how do you move it into your story? Because you can only say something smelled like this, or they caught the scent of this so many times. And so when you see that somebody who's done it really well and it just blows your mind open in a beautiful way, I was like, that's it. There was a tremendous amount of really beautiful verbs that went with all of the smells in that book. It was incredible.
Oh, that's great. That's really good stuff. So let's talk a little bit about your background. So according to your bio, you were an attorney and then you became an author. So were you the kind of, you know, growing up, were you, you like to write in your spare time, or you're like, oh, I don't have time for that, I'm not good at it. And then you went to law school and said, oh, I don't like this, and I just want to be a writer.
Yeah, I was very much, it's funny because I do highlight being an attorney because I think that's really intriguing to a lot of people, but that's really like a tiny piece that is bookended by being an artist and being a writer, because I've always written since I was a kid and always created and always just, you know, had a very vivid imagination. And that was my life. And I thought, I'm going to grow up and become an author. And then I forgot and decided maybe I should be an attorney, and, you know, stayed in the legal career for almost a decade, and very, very eagerly exited.
What was it kind of like, what was the trigger that, what made you say, okay, then, you know, this is definitely it. I'm leaving the legal practice behind. I'm going to devote all my time to writing now.
Yeah, it was multiple triggers. I mean, was the first semester of law school, realizing, whoa, this is not what I was expecting, but not having, you know, I was, you know, just a type A, you know, all A student. Like, I just didn't have the experience of how to quit anything at that point. And especially quitting something as substantial as my first semester of grad school, you know, I was like, well, I guess I'll keep going because I don't know what else I would do. So there was those moments, and there was many moments of realizing this isn't aligned with who I am. This isn't a good fit for me. And then ultimately, you know, I was eventually looking for a way out and got laid off. And I was really grateful and relieved. And I had no idea what I was going to do the next day besides, you know, apply for unemployment and figure it out. But it came at a good time because I had been looking for a way out, but not really having a plan of how to make it work financially.
Okay. So what was, when you started, okay, you said, okay, now I can devote all my time to writing. So mm-hmm. what was it that you said, okay, here's what my first project, or did you have so many things? Oh, I want to write this. And I want to write this. And I think I'm going to try my hand at this one too.
For sure. Yes. I very, very quickly, within a matter of days or weeks, started writing a blog and shared it with the world, you know, started with my friends and family and just said, here's the blog. It's going to be my transition from being an attorney to being a writer. And then also at the same time, I very quickly started writing a collection of short stories for adults, because I felt like if I were to say, I'm going to write a novel, that's such a huge encompassing project. I was like, I'm just going to be overwhelmed. So I'll start with, I can do short stories and I can put enough short stories in a book to fill it up. And then about 3 weeks into that project, I got the idea for Sophie and Spot and set the collection of short stories aside and then just completely devoted my writing time to Sophie and Spot and worked on that until it was published.
Can you tell us a little bit about Sophie and Spot? Like, what was the inspiration for it? And also, what kind of story is it?
Yeah, it's a children's chapter book. And I self-published it. So that means I got to do the creative control. So a lot of children's chapter books are shorter. And mine ended up being about 40, 45,000 words or something like that. You know, which is funny that writers, when I first transitioned, I was like, why are we counting the length of book in words? Like, who does that? But I don't have illustrations on the inside, just an illustrator for the cover. The story itself is based in Lafayette, which is where I live in Colorado, but it's a fictionalized story. And it was inspired by, you know, I had a kid who really wanted a dog. And so it is inspired by our life, but very fictionalized characters, fictionalized reasons why this third grader had to wait to get a dog of her own. Mm-hmm. And it follows her throughout the course of her whole third grade year. So from the fall through her life at home and at school until the following spring.
Okay. And so as we mentioned, so that won the gold medal for best first book and chapter books from mm-hmm. the Moonbeam Children's Book Awards in 2019. So did that kind of set you on the path? Oh, I'm going to write more, you know, children's books. I'm going to dabble in YA. Did it did it kind of like almost force you to pigeonhole yourself or go like, oh, hey, I've got a knack for this. I'm going to stick with this one for right now.
Yeah. It's funny because I've realized over the years, I am not somebody who can even pigeonhole themselves into a category. And I did, after Sophie and Spot was published, it was 2019 that it won the award. And so I was working on a sequel, and I actually have written probably 95% of a second book, which is just a book of poetry to accompany mm-hmm. the original chapter book. And for whatever reason, I just haven't come out with it yet. And then the pandemic hit, and then, like, you know, all chaos broke loose in my life. And it took me a while to realize, okay, what am I writing? You know, because now I'm this award-winning author. And so there's like this pressure to create something else. And I realized all through the pandemic how my writing was coming out was in writing daily thoughts of gratitude and affirmations. And it was literally so helpful for me to process everything that was going on. You know, my mom was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer, I believe, in March of 2020. and ended up passing away in November of 2021. So the pandemic is really shaped by my whole experience with her passing. And so I came out of that and felt like, wow, I haven't been writing anything. And then I looked back and realized I have all these copious notes of just supporting my mental health and keeping, you know, my gratitude practice up. And then, you know, so then I've decided, okay, maybe I'm a writer that doesn't fall into any category. And I also, you know, write as an entrepreneur for Tadpole Press. But then I also decided I'm just going to write whatever interests me. So this last spring, this short story idea came to me. And within 5 days, I just like tunnel vision, shut everything else out and produce the whole book. And it's the Magic Door origin story that I decided I don't want to even deal with the hassle of self-publishing. I'm just going to make it a PDF and sell it on my website.
Oh, okay.
And maybe eventually it'll become one of the short stories in my collection of short stories. But it was just so ready to come out and be shared with the world that I was just like, I'm going to turn it into a PDF because that's super easy. And so that's how that story was born.
How many pages is that one as a PDF?
Ooh, that's a great question that I don't know the answer to.
Okay.
I could look it up.
Or people can go to tadpolepress.com and find out for themselves.
Absolutely.
So one of the things we also, we touched on this at the beginning, that you are also, I wouldn't call it a motivational speaker for writers, but you also, you work with writers to, as it says, to reawaken creativity, incorporate that euphoric feeling to day-to-day life. You call it how to tune into your creative vision. Now, sometimes a writer might hear that and think, oh, you're just talking about writer's block, or you're just like, oh, you know, I don't need to help. I can come up with ideas on my own, but it's sounds like it goes into a lot more than that. So if you kind of explain how you came up with the idea for the, I guess the presentation, if you will. And also because you break it down into three things and I'll let you go into them, but kind of like what was the inspiration for you to start talking about this?
Yeah. I think a lot of it was just mirroring my own writing journey and knowing what I needed as a writer. And, you know, maybe there's some writers out there who just have all the confidence in the world, but that hasn't been my experience. And
sure.
It's very vulnerable to put yourself out there, especially with the early drafts of something. And it's this scary place to share your writing with the world. And so I know how that feels. And I also know how important it is to maintain your own connection to your authentic voice while surrounding yourself with community. And so in order to, I mean, I guess a lot of it is just in order to build that confidence, that's the, how you say, like a motivational speaker for writers. That's my goal. Is I really truly believe that each story like has the writer that's a perfect match to be told through. And so to boost the confidence of the writer, to remember you are the perfect person to tell this story. And here's the reasons why. And if we can encourage you and lift you up, that's the goal. It's not so much of here's how you have to shape your story or here's the part 1, 2, 3 that you need to put in. I don't care if it fits the traditional structure or totally breaks out of the box, but can I leave you feeling empowered and creative? And ultimately what that does is it diversifies literature because it allows other people to see their story being told. And I love that so much.
What has been the response to this? I mean, and I guess the other question is, who do you give this presentation to? Do you go to writing groups or do writers come to you and say, hey, I hear you're helping writers. Here's my problem.
Yeah. So it's evolved over the years. I used to take on individual writing coaching clients. I used to host in-person writing retreats. Now my work is primarily focused on the Tadpole Press 100 word writing contest, and simultaneously to that, my email list, which is where I share blog posts from my blog, Living a Life Imagined, and really the fundamental values of Tadpole Press and everything we do to incorporate into our contest are to align with that empowerment, the positivity, the encouragement piece that that comes out of all that.
Okay, so it sounds, it's not just motivational speaking, it's kind of like a pep talk. It's kind of like, come on, come on, I know you can do this. You know, you got to dig deep and find that idea, find that creativity, relight that spark, that sort of mindset.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is. And it's, I've had so many people respond to the emails that we send out and just say, this is fantastic. This is the most inspiring thing I've read. Like, I think people are really craving that feeling of being seen and being heard and being valued and having a safe place, because writing is so vulnerable and we pour so much of ourselves and our identities into our writing, to say you have a safe place to create. And it's just so well received. It's really wonderful.
Oh, that is fantastic. Because I can definitely speak from the screenwriting point of view that you complete a draft and then you put it out there. You might get notes or you might enter a contest. And if someone comes back and it's very critical, a lot of writers will take that very personal personally, but also that as the note giver, I have to remind them that, you know, this is just my opinion. You can take it, you can leave it. And also that the comments are about the material. It's not about the writer. And it's really hard for a writer to separate themselves from their material. It's like, this is my baby. How can you crush my baby like that? But they also have to realize that the only way you're going to get better is to get criticism and to get notes about how to improve the material. And that will in turn help you become a better writer. Now, is that part of what some of the material that you cover when you're working with writers?
Yeah, that reminds me a lot of the editing that I would do for writers, because it was always done with the understanding that I'm one voice and I'm one perspective, and having an outside voice who can come, you know, externally and look in on your writing instead of you seeing what you think is actually there, it can be really valuable. But ultimately, it comes back to the writer. And so I would shape my editing comments of based on the story or this sentence or, you know, something concrete within the words on the page, rather than you doing this, you meaning the writer, because it does reflect, it's about this work. But at the same time, there's also an understanding, there are so many different opinions, even within editors. It's not like you just have one teacher of life that you have to submit it and get an A or an F with. It's it's just a recognition that, one, having that community piece can be so helpful, but two, choosing who you let in to be your community, whether it's a critique partner or a beta reader or an editor or whoever, do they understand your vision and do they understand what you're trying to do as a writer or an artist? And if so, then welcome them into the process and take into consideration what they're saying. But if they don't, if they fundamentally have a different goal for your project or a different take on what they think your story should be, that's where I would encourage you to have a little red flag come up and decide, whoa, maybe this isn't the person that I want to let into my community, because that they can take over your vision too easily.
Right. That raises two points. The first one, that is one of the three things that you talk about in this, about your creative vision, is building your community. Yeah. That, you know, writing, for the most part, it's a solitary activity. But if you can have, you know, a core group of peers whose skill level is equal to, or if you're lucky, better than yours, then, and you are able to exchange notes and material with them, that both of you, in theory, will become better writers as a result of it, that your skills will improve, but also your material will improve. Because you were saying about getting notes back, that when I give notes on a script, I ask a lot of questions. Yeah. Never come back. I'll never come out and tell a writer, this is awful. But I will say, okay, I'm not really sure I understand what you're going for here. What's this character's motivation? I don't understand why they're doing this. Mm-hmm. And you have this thing on page 10 and you have something completely contradictory on page 34. Yeah. And that, because I never try to be mean with notes because I know how much a writer, how much time and effort they put into their material. And I try to be as supportive and as helpful. Some writers might take it as critical. I mean, I once had this writer who got back to me said, when I first read your notes, I wanted to kill you because I hated everything you said. Oh. But then I went back and read all of your notes.
Yeah.
And he said, and I can't disagree with anything you said. Because I wasn't mean. I just said, here's issues I have with what is on the page. It's not about you as a writer. It's about what I'm reading. Now, do you go through that sort of thing when you're working with writers? I mean, do you see material that, you know, at first glance, you know, it needs a lot of work. And so you have your work cut out for you to give them notes. And then you give them the notes. So what is the reaction bit? Do you get writers saying, oh, how dare you question my genius? Or like, thank you. This is so helpful. This is exactly what I needed.
I think it's so interesting to hear that response from that person, because that maybe is somebody who's not lacking in confidence. Like if they're like, I was ready to kill you. Cause I think my, you know, first thought is I would probably internalize it and think, oh my gosh, I should just kill this project. Or why did I even think I should be a writer? And that's interesting to see that juxtaposition, but it's almost like the fight or flight gets triggered. Mm. We're like put into threat zone or something, but no, it's really, like you said, comes down to asking a lot of questions and being respectful and saying, this is what I'm seeing. Is this your goal? Or, you know, especially with, I would do diversity editing. And so many of us will incorporate implicit bias into our writing because it just reflects the society that we've all been raised in. And so a lot of times I would point out places where gender or racial biases are slipping in and say, is this crucial to the characters or the plot in some way? Or is this just coming across as an implicit bias? And a lot of times the writers would say, wow, I had no idea that was even in there. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you pointed it out. And then they could go, and once they're aware of the issue, then make the decision to intentionally revise it or cut it out or change it. Or in some instances, if it was, you know, pertinent to what's happening, leave it in. So.
Okay. Okay. So we've discussed build your community. So another, I guess, guideline that you have is listen to your authentic voice. Mm-hmm. Now that could be interpreted so many ways.
Yeah.
I mean, so how, what is your, I guess the basic message that you're trying to get across with that one?
Hmm. That's a great way to frame that question. I like that. I think the basic message would be, I have read so much over my life, and I'm really interested in breaking open this world of literature and diversifying it. And when, unfortunately, if you are pitching to a traditional publisher, they are investing a lot of money to print physical books. And so they are wanting your story to be as close to something similar that was successful in the past. And so there's really this incentive to kind of narrow the funnel or the direct people to align their stories and keep it similar. And I am just really intrigued by writing that breaks the rules and does something unique. And so that's where I see all of these areas in the literature and especially the publishing industries that really focus on getting the author to change their unique story in order to fit with what they think is marketable or sellable. And my pushback against that is to say, I really think each of us has a unique story to tell. And there's so much, it's just such gold to see that created from a unique voice, or to change a standard story. Maybe it's a fairy tale or a love story or something we've all seen many times, but to come at it from a different angle. And so that you have to have a level of confidence and be able to retain your authentic voice in order to withstand the pressure to conform. But that's a key to what I see as diversifying literature. So it's that's where I get fired up and excited.
Okay. So that raises two points that I want to mention really quickly, that because you're talking about what in screenwriting, we call it familiar but different. So it's like a traditional story, but there's this unique spin on it that so someone reading it will be like, oh, this reminds me of this thing, but there's this unique approach to it that I've never seen before.
Yeah.
And so that's, and sometimes that's what producers or reps are looking for. And so that can work to your advantage. You were saying like, you know, it's a fairy tale, but you know, this time the princess kicks everybody's ass, you know, that
for
sort of
sure.
thing. So that, and about listening to your authentic voice is one of the things I always like to tell writers who are starting out is write something you would want to watch. Because it's because when you are a fan of the material that you're working with, that it shows, it's evident on the page that if you're a, you love mysteries, you're going to come up with your own detective and come up with this story that, you know, all of the tropes and the cliches, but you also know how to have fun with it, that you would write something that you, as we're talking before about watching it as a writer, you know, you're reading or watching a movie or reading a book that you can tell the writer had fun or really enjoyed themselves writing it. And now, is that something that you're able to detect when you're working with another writer? Like, are they, do they, does the writing seem, when you're talking about the authentic voice, does the enthusiasm from for the material, does that come through on the page for you as a reader?
Usually I would say yes, because it grabs you and pulls you in a little bit. You know, I would say, for example, one of our winners in our last contest, which was, so we're recording this in April of 2024. So our previous contest was November of 23. And one of our winners wrote a beautiful love poem, but set it in the context of an observatory and included language, you know, about the pull of gravity. And so it's, again, similar but different. And just that unique twist or coming at it from a different angle and incorporating all those elements of, you know, observing planets or space and that whole context is, it just takes it out of the familiar enough to, you're still relating to it. It's still relatable and you can connect with it, but it's fascinating and intriguing and makes, like, how many poems have you read that are set in an observatory and comparing the people to, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what I love.
And then that kind of does lead into the third aspect of your presentation is have fun with it.
Yes.
That because like I, you know, just said that you can tell when the writer had a good time writing it, because there's just a certain tone to the material that it reads differently than if someone just wrote, I'm just going to crank this out. And, you know, just because these things are popular right now, that there's no heart or sentiment to it.
Absolutely. It's huge to you can tell when somebody is doing it to just check it off their off the box and move on to the next thing, or because this is what they would be doing regardless. And it's so much more fun when you can see the joy coming through, because that does reflect on your experience as the reader. And this is, it's funny, so each New Year's for the past few years, I've been just choosing one word to be my word for the year. And so for 2023, my word was hero, you know, the whole like hero versus victim journey and just huge, you know, spiritual and emotional growth. And it was fantastic and it was great, but it was like deep and you're in the muck. And so this year I was like, whew, I'm ready to move on from that. And so I was focusing, what is it that I want to call into my year this year? And so I chose the word euphoric. I just wanted that feeling of joy and laughter and fun, and maybe not take myself too seriously. I did a lot of serious work last year. So that theme has been resonating in my writing as well, because, you know, especially having come from a legal background and having a career where you take yourself very, very seriously, I realized I could spend my whole life being just serious about writing. And I just really want to kick that idea out and say, I'm just going to play with some words like I was when I was a kid, and I'm going to create for fun, and I'm going to use my imagination, but it's coming with a sense of playfulness about it. And it doesn't have to be so serious, or, you know, the pressure to turn into something successful or even mean anything. It's just because it's an enjoyable, fun thing to do.
That's great. I mean, I love the idea of it's almost like a theme for the year.
Yeah, it is.
Do you think it's that? Do you struggle with coming up with the word? I mean, is this the second year you've done it? Or do you think like, oh, you know, it's going to be hero, it's going to be joy, it's going to be anger, it's going to be intrigue.
This year was hard to choose because it is like, it's a word that sticks with you through the year. So joy was a word that I considered, right? But I don't know if maybe this is just me, but you see joy on enough holiday cards at the end of the year, and it starts to lose its meaning a little bit. Or like, you know, same thing with, you know, laughter or humor or, you know, all of these things. And I was like, it's almost like they're so common that it tones down the vibrancy a little bit.
It loses its impact.
Yes. Yeah. And so I played around with a lot of variations and realized there was this one word that, and I didn't want euphoria. I wanted euphoric because that's the adjective form of the word to describe the feeling inside of just being like electrified with joy in life.
Okay. So let us kind of go circle back that you work with writers. So how can somebody get in touch with you? They like what they've heard today and they say, oh, I want to know more. You know, this is just what I need. This is the thing to give me the kick in the pants that I need to really get back into it. So how can people get in touch with you to find out more?
Absolutely. The biggest thing that I'm doing is, again, the writing contest, which is the Tadpole Press 100 word writing contest. So very short. And I'd suggest a place to go to start if you're interested is tadpolepress.com/welcome. That's our new welcome page, and you can sign up for our email list there. And if you're interested in the contest, we also offer community write-in events about once a month. And that's a great place to come get a sense of the community vibe that we're building. You know, we have writers from all around the world, from LA to Singapore to everywhere, and different themes and different activities. And each write-in event, you also get one entry into the next or the current contest. So that's where I would recommend people start.
Okay, and now we're going to do a little time manipulation. So we were talking about this before we started recording. So the current 100 word writing contest, the deadline, when you're watching or listening to this, it was April 30th, because this is post going up in May. So I thought it was a monthly thing, but Amber told me it is a twice a year event. So when is the next deadline for people who missed out this one, the one that's just wrapped up? When is the next session?
Yeah, so the deadline for the contest itself is every April 30th and November 30th. But again, so the big event that will be happening right after this goes live is our announcement of the winners, which is at a free Zoom event live. And that's the Celebration of Words, which is coming up on May 21st. And if you miss that, then again, just check out our website. We'll have new community write-in events about once every month. And then that gives you a, you know, insight into what we're looking for with the contest as well, and gives you time to work on your piece to submit it before the November deadline.
And does it have to be 100 words, or can it be up to 100 words?
Up to 100 words.
So 101, you're out.
Right. It's really tricky. And that does include the title. So we don't require a title, but if you want to put a title on, then you need to make sure that it's only 100 words or less.
So 100 words plus including the title.
Yes.
Oh, that one I did not know. That makes it
Yeah.
even more chill. Now you have like 95 words to work with. So,
Yeah.
okay, writers, you've got your assignment if you want to enter. Amber Byers, this has been fascinating stuff and really, really informative. I really appreciate you coming on the show today.
Thank you so much. It's been really fun to be here.
Great, great. And that website again is tadpolepress.com. And Amber Byers is the founder and CEO of Tadpole Press. So if any of your questions or you want to find out more about her writing services or you need a writing coach, she's the one to get in touch with. Amber, thank you again so much. This has been wonderful.
Thank you so much. It's been great to be here.
Great. Thank you, Amber. You can check out my screenwriting blog, Maximum Z, at maximumz.blog. I'm still on Twitter at maximum_z. I'm also on Instagram at PezScreenwriting. And feel free to follow the Twitter account for this podcast at podcastCWL, of course, for Creative Writing Life. She's Amber. I'm Paul. This has been the Creating Writing Life podcast. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, stay healthy, and most importantly, go write something.